I call this the next steps because last June in Columbus, I presented with my buddies from RSM, and that was kind of what I called ERM 1.0. That got us to check the box for the ORSA, right? So that's what started this whole ERM phase. So we were at bare minimum, we're slowly progressing forward. And RSM came in to help us for year one, and the caveat was, yeah, we'll pay you for year one, but you need to teach us for going forward. So this is the next steps, or 2.0, whatever you want to call it. As Andrew would like to point out, this is my picture from when I joined Paramount in November of 14, and look how much I've aged. That's what ERM will do to you. So before I get into this fun stuff, very informal. Raise your hand if you have questions. I'm going to go through a lot of material. Some I'm going to skip over, but I wanted in the slides for you all to have for reference later. Contact information is there. So about me, Director of Finance for Paramount Healthcare since November of 14. From this group and also last year, it seems kind of weird that ERM is under finance, but that's how it is at our organization, so that's what it is. I relocated to Northwest Ohio from Lexington, Kentucky, so I hear some Southern accents, so I feel like I'm at home and I really enjoy it. Prior roles, not in healthcare. Banking and finance and higher education. So I'm a huge University of Kentucky fan. I went there for undergrad and I worked there for 6 years prior to coming to Paramount. I don't miss the faculty. How did I learn about ERM? Well, to be honest, I was new in November of 14. We had to file our first ORSA in December of 15. I learned what ORSA stood for about March or April of 15. And I was the new guy, so hey, he has capacity. It's on his shoulders, right? That's how it works in our organizations. So that's how I learned about it. Email address, phone number, feel free to contact me. Agenda, we're going to define the ERM. I feel like I should stand over here. Everybody's still over there. We're going to define the ERM. We're going to talk about the benefits, components, the governance structure, and the defined SRM, strategic risk management. And I'm going to do a lot of reading when there's definitions, so bear with me. Enterprise risk management, a process affected by an entity's board of directors, management, and other personnel applied in strategy setting across the enterprise, designed to identify potential events that may affect the entity and manage risk to be within its risk appetite to provide reasonable assurance regarding the achievement of entity objectives. Yeah, whatever. ERM is the process of planning, organizing, leading, and controlling the activities of an organization in order to minimize the effects of risk of an organization's capital and earnings. You want to protect your assets, right? You want to minimize the risk of losses through ERM. Strategic risk management, which we'll talk about a little bit later, is a business discipline that drives deliberation and action regarding uncertainties and untapped opportunities that affect an organization's strategy and strategy execution. So ERM right now, at the very beginning, the foundational, is a lot of checking the box, very siloed. SRM, you want to look at advancing forward. That's both positive and negative risks, and incorporate into your strategic management. ERM consists of active and intrusive processes that, one, are capable of challenging existing assumptions about the world within and outside the organization, communicate risk information with the use of distinct tools, risk maps, stress tests, scenarios. I think somebody's going over the forecasting or reporting a little bit later. I'm really excited to hear that because we have not been able to create a concise reporting format for our board. Collectively address gaps in the control of risk that other control functions, such as internal audits or other boundary controls, leave unaddressed, and in doing so, complement, but do not displace or replace, existing management control practices. So internal audit, compliance, those are complements. They're not to be replaced. They're different lines of defense. So that's the definitions, right? Let's go to the benefits of ERM. And I'm trying to get through this early stuff pretty fast because there's some more meat. But I want to include some of the basics because there's a lot of IT folks and other people that aren't as familiar with ERM as some of us around here. And again, raise your hand if you have questions, if you want me to stop on something. Benefits of ERM. Enhanced board risk oversight responsibilities. Again, the board is the one who's held accountable. I can tell you that from going through a Ohio Department of Insurance, Michigan Department of Insurance, IRS, and CMS one-third audit all within the last 12 months that they're looking at risk management. They interview the board. The board is going to have a heightened sense of awareness if they get sat down by CMS, the spotlight on them. Tell us about your risk management process. Two, required in certain industries, financial and insurance. So this is almost more related to MAR, Model Audit Rule, but it's like the Sarbanes-Oxley of insurance plans. ERM is the backbone to MAR, at least for us. Executive risk-informed decision-making. Individual risk silos do not work and create new measurable value. More benefits. Volatility and uncertainty are abound. Look at our environment right now. Anybody that's in commercial or health insurance exchange, you're living day by day, waiting for repeal or not. Competitive advantage is critical for future success. I have some good examples of that a little bit later. Avoid the strategy execution gap. We'll talk a lot about that. Enhance audit and compliance. Again, complements, not to replace. Lessen the impact of adverse events. Benefits of ERM. Planning is the key. So Abraham Lincoln, give me 6 hours to chop down a tree, and I'll spend the first 4 hours sharpening the axe. What's that mean? The process of getting there will ultimately determine your final result. So planning is a very important step to business strategy. A lot of times you spend a lot of time planning only to execute or fail to execute depending on what happens. So these next two slides are really cool. If you're trying to present to a board, I would suggest using these two slides. For those of you that know me, I'm very type A, OCD, and it really annoys me that PowerPoint / Excel would not make these to scale. So look at the percents, not the blocks. It drives me crazy. So what are we looking at here? Strategy execution gap. The proportion of significant losses in market value caused by each risk over the past decade. So the different risks are strategic, operating, legal compliance, financial reporting. Strategic is responsible for 86% of the losses. Operational, 9%. Legal compliance, 3%. Financial reporting, 2%. I'm happy to say that as the director of finance. Financial reporting is only 2%, right? Now, how much time do auditors spend on each risk? Remember, 86% of strategic was the cause of the loss. They spend 6% of their time on strategic objectives. 42% on operating, 13% on legal compliance, 39% on financial reporting. Do you remember the percent for financial reporting? 2% to 39%. Why? Because those are quantifiable. They have hard, fast processes you can look at, you can document, etc. Again, this shows why ERM is a complement to internal audit, to compliance, not to replace. But that's a huge issue. 6% of time spent on strategic when it's creating 86% of losses. And that's from Harvard Business Review. I have all my citations down at the bottom in case the citation police are here. So sample risk categories, we talked about this a little bit at the round table, but what are some sample risk categories? Underwriting, you have model risk, product pricing, reserves, natural catastrophe. How real is that right now? Natural catastrophe, right? Reserves, you ever fear that your IBNP is under-reserved? Is that just me because I'm a finance guy? Where's the CFO? Is that, yeah. Your end is coming. Strategic, regional concentration of risk. How scary is that now with the Obamacare and HICS, right? Are you going to be the only individual exchange offering in a county? How much adverse risk are you going to have? Reputational risk, Equifax, Anthem. Need I say more? Was it Equifax or Experian? Thank you. All right, I was right the first time. See, Experian is emailing me like crazy saying, look at Equifax, right? So now I'm confused who it is. Global national economy, who knows what's going to happen? Competition, is a national plan going to move into your market? Operational availability of reinsurance, your regulatory risk, IT risk, that's what we're here for. Personnel risk, do you have the right personnel? Succession planning, that's one of our top 15 risks. Market, investment market risk, how's the market going to do? Liquidity, are your claims going to increase? I don't know if you're like me, but it seems like claims increase and your cap rates decrease. credit, reinsurer credit. So say you get reinsurance, does your reinsurer have proper credit to back you up, especially in the case of a natural catastrophe or something like that? Do you check their SOC 1 reports? Next, components of ERM. So this is kind of a lot of the meat and potatoes that a lot of questions around the table had. So feel free to jump up with questions or we can offline later if need be. Steps to design an ERM. Define the desired program, implement the charter, establish your risk appetite, define tolerance levels, and start your risk assessment process. I can tell you the easiest part is this, once you get through all those. Five key ERM practices. You have your risk identification, your risk organization, and that's not organization as in us, a plan. That's organization as in organizing your risks. Your limits and controls, your measurement, your stress testing, and then your ERM framework. All right, this is the fun part. So how do you define your desired program? Here's a fun tool that you all are all going to want, and I'm going to fly through this pretty quick, but you have it on your slides. And I think the electronic version is available because it's going to be really small on the slides. I don't even know if I'll be able to read it. So this is a good tool to take to your board or your executive team, whoever's going to define your limit. Foundational, common practice, best in class. Keep in mind, foundational, that's like your siloed, what I talked about at the very beginning, your starter ERM, your check the box. Okay, we met the regulatory requirement. Best in class, complete strategic alignment. Five criterion to poll your board on or ask them questions on. Risk organization and governance, risk appetite and tolerance, metrics and measurement, risk management process procedures and controls, risk monitoring, reporting, and communication. So basically what you're going to do, you're going to have this arrow for each one of these. You're going to ask them to define it for you. You can't define it because you don't know what they want. We've talked about culture a lot here. You're only going to be as successful as your culture. And that starts from the top down, you know, the cliche saying. But really, they set the culture. And so if you set up a program to be here, but your C-suite only wants to be here, you're not going to be successful. So you need to find out where they want you on this continuum before you set up your process. So risk organization and governance. I'm just going to go ahead and throw these up here. Risk management function centered on compliance, audit, and controls, silo-based risk management process. This, a lot of times, no offense to any of you in here, where's Jason? This is what happens if internal audit or compliance runs ERM. That's their expertise. That's what they know. Over here, functioning cross-functional senior management risk committee. Risk management is viewed by a partner by the business units, established CRO, chief risk officer. And in the middle is somewhere in the middle. So what I would suggest is you print these out, put it on a pretty slide, your logo, whatever, and you give them this and say, put an X where you want us to be. Pull all your board members, your executive team, bring it all together, and then you say, the next presentation, you say, here's what you all said where you wanted to be. Now let's start the process. But this is the planning, right? It goes back to Abraham Lincoln's quote back there. You have to plan to be successful. Criterion two, risk appetite and tolerance. We're going to talk a lot about that here in a couple minutes. Foundational, individual risk limits, and it lists a bunch of the things I went over just a minute ago. Limited monitoring and reporting. This is, we did it once this year. We don't need to keep up with it, right? We did it once. It's in the ORS report. We're done. Best in class, risk appetite statement is articulated, both quantitative and qualitative aspects. Incorporates multiple stakeholder viewpoints. UIT people, how different do you think than this finance person? A lot different. Risk appetite and tolerance validated through quantitative modeling, your stress testing, right? So again, best in class, foundational. And one's not right and one's not wrong. It depends where your organization wants to be. I mean, we're talking about mitigation strategies. How much does your organization want to invest in it? Criterion three, metrics and measurements. Metrics are based on accounting, regulatory reporting requirements. That's how we started. Let's just look at our net income and our RBC levels, right? Who cares about the other stuff? Measurement techniques for financial and event risks. Over here, best in class. measurement metrics for all risk categories with aggregate capabilities, aggregation of capabilities. That ties into your risk appetite and tolerance. We'll cover that again in a minute. Modeling key risks in common terms. Can the board pick it up and understand it? It's very important. They're not going to want to research. They're not going to want to read a lot. They don't have a bunch of time, especially if your board's like mine and not paid. Yep. Wait. Podcast.
Hey, Jonathan.
Thanks. I need water.
Did you find that when you started out or along this course that you did foundational for some of the categories versus best in the class for others? Because you broke it out into the financial, the operations, strategic. Mm-hmm. So maybe, again, because it's your expertise, you may have done best in class for the financial part. But for operations, maybe it was small amount of time is spent on audits. We're going to do foundational. Did you guys do that or did you go one direction or the other?
So I will be blatantly honest here. We were probably completely foundational to begin with. And as I mentioned earlier, we brought in RSM. Well, that's because we had about 5-6 months to get our ORSA reported. So we were like, let's do what we have to do to get the regulatory requirements, right? We did not take this poll with the board yet. And I'll tell you why I have these slides in a second. The board has slowly progressed by their oversight in telling us where they want to be. So we have an understanding already of where they want us to be without doing this. Now, the ERM process for our plan has been pretty successful that the system, our system, has been looking at it. They're not required to have it regulatorily. However, they see the success, as well as Paramount's, our plan, board chair, is now the board chair of the system. And he's like, hey, that worked good over there. I want to see it over here. So I've actually prepared these to go to their board and their audit risk committee to see where they want to be. But no, we did a very painful process. I'm trying to give you tips to be successful. We did in a very painful process of starting from scratch and not really knowing where we want to be. So there's stuff that we've done over 2 or 3 times to get where we are now, and I can tell you there's still a lot of growth. But there are some places where we're still here. I wouldn't say we're here with any of them, but you can see, I mean, different criteria. We're over here, it just depends. Yeah. Yep.
Did your regulators give you feedback after the first year that you submitted? At like, because I'm looking at the different categories, yeah, and we've submitted twice. We're going to be submitting the third time for ORSA. What we heard from our regulators, we're going to have to get towards common practice or closer to best in class based on their feedback. They're expecting improvement every year. So first foundational, your section one's pretty strong, 2 and 3 not so much. And that should shift as you get more, yep, advanced and mature.
So somebody mentioned it earlier back there. We did get feedback, but not for 2 years. So in all honesty, I thought that it was probably just sitting on the corner of a desk collecting dust, because all I got was the return postage saying it was delivered, right? Because I want to make sure that baby was there. But during our ODI, Ohio Department of Insurance audit, the commissioner called a meeting with us while the auditors were on site, and they said, we want to talk to you about ERM. And sorry for those of you that have already heard the story. And so when you hear that, you're like, oh, shit, right? Can't say that. Oh, crap. They want to talk about ERM, so I'm sweating bullets, right? They pulled us in. They said, hey, let's go over your ORSA. This is hands down the best in the state of Ohio that we've seen. Can we use this to share with others? And I credit a lot of that to RSM, because they kind of set us up with a template and told us what elements we needed. But yeah, so we did get a lot of positive feedback. And the thing that helped us during the audit, and I would say almost more so during the CMS audit than the Department of Insurance audit, is, and Andrea is my ERM coordinator. I don't know if you all have been introduced. She's our ERM coordinator here. She overlays the heat maps. So first year heat map to second year heat map, and our board really likes that. So we're now at third year and second year heat map. But where have the risks progressed? The Departments of Insurance, they want to see those risks going from the top right quadrant, the highest risk, down towards the bottom left, if at all possible. Some risks are always going to be at the top. For instance, one of our risks is the reprocurement of the Medicaid bid. Medicaid is $1.1 billion of our $1.4 billion of revenue. If that goes away, we're screwed, right? That's always going to be a high risk. But we have mitigating controls to deal with that. But it's never going to progress down to low and drop off the radar. But if you have that, the overlay of heat map to heat map after year after year, it really helps to show the regulators where you're progressing, and that's attributable to a maturing process. So if you don't have a mature process or if it's not growing, your risks aren't going to go away. Did that answer your question? Uh-huh. Any other questions? The other thing for everybody who saw my Excel spreadsheet, having that with regulators really helps too, because it shows them that you're not just doing a once a year thing, that you're consistently following up on risk. Is anybody asleep yet? Do we need stretches? Okay. Risk management process, procedures, and controls. Functional risk management function centered on insurance and other traditional risks. Internal audit focused on compliance, audit, and controls. You know, those easy things that are easily monitorable or quantifiable. Over here, enterprise-wide view of key risks to the strategy. ERM goals and objectives articulated and aligned with business strategy and objectives. I'll talk more about that, but that's the SRM. Align it with your strategy, not just a one-off process. And the last criterion, risk monitoring, reporting, and communication. Ad hoc reporting, although there may be a significant lag time. So if it's just your once a year thing, there could be a slow process, right? Other things get more important. You delay it till the very last minute. That never happens, right? Reactive response to risk events and reports, very reactive. Oh, crap, that just happened. We should probably include that on the dashboard. You know, whereas strategic, you need to kind of be thinking forward. What's the next thing? Risk management dashboard that includes, that's the word I was trying to find earlier, dashboard. That includes reporting metrics linked to risk appetite, tolerance, and strategy. Very, very strategic minded. Any questions before I move on? It's a lot to take in, so really look at these when you're looking at developing your process or furthering it.
So is there a chance that you can have criteria one be foundational and then the rest be best in class?
Absolutely. So, I mean, I've seen this survey done where there are check boxes next to each of these, and ideally this would be the same thing across. Like, what level of this do you want? I can tell you the board that I'm presenting to would throw that back at me because they don't want to take the time for that. So it's easier for them to peruse this and then just put an X. But it's whatever would work with your organization.
Okay. So, like, criteria one, if it's siloed risk management processes, they would select that for foundational, and then they would move to two and select common practices? Or if you select one for foundational, you're kind of going one foundational for everything?
No, you can be all over the board. So, I mean, if you're looking at your organization and governance, maybe that's your easiest thing to set up. So say you have an ERM committee and a CRO that's going to then design your program, okay? Say you said the governance up first, that could be best common practice or best in class, and then the rest of this may follow.
Okay.
The key is you want to progress.
But the reverse is not possible, right? I cannot have risk monitoring as best in class if I've selected my organization and governance as foundational.
It would be a challenge.
Okay.
It would be a challenge. I mean, you could have a really pretty dashboard, but it could only come out once a year. Any other questions while I'm flipping through these? Okay, so this is just a repeat. I just wanted to... So, define desired program. Now we need to talk about implement ERM charter, risk appetite, tolerance levels, and assessment process. And these aren't nearly as detailed, so I won't bore you as much, hopefully. Implement your ERM charter. So an ERM charter is developed to formally establish the ERM function, just like any other committee of the board or official committee that has minutes and all that fun stuff. I'm thinking of Robert's Rules. Does anybody like Robert's Rules? No? All right. Based on the desired state as learned via the gap analysis, so what we just talked about, that's the gap analysis, must be approved by the board or appropriate committee. I have seen some structures where the board delegates risk oversight to a committee. I would suggest that be a subcommittee of the board if they do delegate it. You don't want it to be a management committee or executive committee. And it must include the definition of the ERM for the organization, your mission, the sponsors, so oftentimes they'll be your CRO, your frequency of meeting, your framework. We use COSO 13. There's another model, ISO. I can't remember the numbers that are after it, but those are the two most popular. I would say COSO is probably the most popular for insurance. ISO is more popular for international companies that are publicly traded. Responsibilities of the committee, focus on key risks and integrations with operations. And one thing that I didn't include on there when it says responsibilities of the committee, I like to include the membership of the committee. So who should be there? Who's ad hoc? Who needs to be there? Establish your risk appetite. Determining the risk appetite starts by determining the organization's risk capacity. So how much risk can your organization handle? Oh, sorry, I jumped the gun there. An organization's ability to withstand risk when it becomes fact while avoiding unwanted effects. So that's the definition of risk capacity. Here's your ISO guide, 73-2009, and here's your COSO. ISO defines risk appetite as the amount and type of risk that an organization is willing to pursue or retain. Their competitor, COSO, risk appetite definition is a broad-based description of the desired level of risk that an entity will take in pursuit of its mission. Very similar, just differently worded. Risk tolerance, according to ISO, is an organization's readiness to bear the risk after risk treatment in order to achieve its objectives. And risk tolerance, according to COSO, reflects the acceptable variation in outcomes related to specific performance measures linked to objectives the entity seeks to achieve. Why did we choose COSO? I like the stress testing model a little bit better, a little bit easier to understand. Not a whole lot of difference between the two. Risk appetite. So let's talk about risk appetite a little more. Risk appetite is strategic and related to the pursuit of organizational objectives, pretty common, should form an integral part of the organizational governance, should guide the allocation of resources. So the board likes that. The president, the CEO, the COO don't always like that. So can you imagine telling them right now, this risk management process that I'm designing should tell you how you're going to spend your money? It's not like that. So then you have to say, whoa, whoa, whoa. It's not going to tell you how to spend your money. It's going to help guide you on if you're spending it on a risk that aligns with our strategic objectives. So make sure you're spending in accordance with our strategic objectives. It's multidimensional, looking at short and long-term goals of the strategic planning cycle. Requires effective monitoring of the risk itself and the organization's continuing risk appetite. So as you spend on risks or as risks occur, your risk appetite is going to decrease or increase, okay? It should link directly to the organizational's objectives, should be stated precisely enough that it can be communicated throughout the organization, effectively monitored, and adjusted over time, and it helps with setting acceptable tolerances for risk, thereby identifying the parameters of acceptable risk. So I'm throwing out a lot of crazy terms here with risk appetite, risk tolerance. I have a diagram here in a little bit that's really good to present to executives and boards that really helps them understand what risk appetite and tolerance means to the entity. And I can say I probably didn't fully understand it until I saw this diagram. So bear with me. We'll get there. A generalized risk appetite statement. So this is just a generic one. We take risks to build and grow our business, but only if those risks, one, fit our business strategy and can be understood and managed. Two, do not expose the enterprise to any significant single loss events. We do not bet the firm on any single acquisition, business, or product. And three, do not risk harming our brand. So over here is a dashboard, if you can call it, of the organization that had this generic one. On this side, it's really hard to see, but here's your financial impact. So that ties to this one right here. We don't bet the farm on one thing. And over here, here's your reputational risk. And they've defined the different scale from bad to good, bad to good. And this helps them with their voting process, their risk prioritization process. And so what I'm showing over here is the scoring relates to the risk appetite statement. Okay? I also want to point out there's good down here. Again, ERM a lot of times thinks about negative risks. There are some good risks. So some examples, our organization has been pretty aggressively growing in our workers' comp division. Why? It's small dollars, but you're talking 20, 25, 30% margin compared to what we get in healthcare. 2.5, 3% if we're lucky, right? So that was one of our strategic objectives that was realized from our ERM process. Another one was we noticed we had a lot of cash on hand after the first year of stress testing. So much cash that we could still maintain our RBC levels and our balance sheet position, but earn more on investment income. So that was an upside risk, right? We uncovered that. We changed our investment strategy, and now we're receiving more investment income while keeping our RBC levels at a place where we're comfortable. And I'll say we're very conservative in our approach to investments and RBC. Any questions on that before I move on? Does that make sense? Okay, here's this fun diagram. Risk appetite diagram. Again, this is very good to share, so get familiar with it if you want to. Green, here's your plan performance. So all of us, we have 1, 3, 5-year forecasts, right? That magic eight ball, you shake it, you're like, ah, I'm going to land here. Dartboard, some people use dartboards. So this is our plan performance. The red is our risk universe. So what's the total universe for the industry? In all honesty, that red could probably be completely up and down on this axis. You could, sky's the limit, or you could completely tank, right? The yellow is your risk appetite, your organization's willingness to lose or make money based off of the risks you identify. The entire organization, so that's the yellow. The blue is your risk tolerance. So within those risks that you've identified, what's your tolerance level for each of those? I can tell you your tolerance levels combined should not go outside the yellow, right? Does that help? Clear things up between tolerance and appetite and then your universe? Clear as mud? I like this diagram. It's helpful for visual people. Define tolerance levels. So we just talked a little bit about those. To evaluate a new risk opportunity program, what is the worst and best case scenario? Again, this originally just said worst, but we're looking at best, right? Trying to change you all to strategic risk management. Worst, best case scenario. What does it cost or return if it happens? What's the mitigation strategy? Based on a cost comparison, do you mitigate or accept the risk? Pretty simple. That's the process you go through in your head or through your committee when you have a risk that comes up. ERM, ideally, you already have a plan in place. Now, that doesn't mean things aren't going to come up out of the blue and you're going to have to go through this in a really quick process. Does the evaluated risk remain within the established risk tolerance levels? Does it stay in here? If yes, your leadership may make the decision to move forward or not. So this really helps with those business unit leaders when they're like, oh, you're capping me on what I can do. Let me manage my business, right? Well, you can, but within a certain threshold, okay? If no, is it within the risk appetite? So if it goes outside the blue, is it still within this yellow? If it is, then you go to the risk council, internal management, for final approval. So whoever the board deems responsible for staying within this, that's who you go to. If no, then you're going to the board for approval. Okay? So it doesn't mean that you can't do it. It just means you have to follow your own policies to get approval. Something really good could happen to you. For instance, I don't know if you all have heard the saying, you're either growing or you're getting bought, right? So something could come, another insurance company that's a competitor of yours could come up in the market for sale. Well, you may have to borrow some, but it is a competitive risk that you're willing to take. If something like that happens, it's probably going to be outside of this if it's a large competitor, but it could be worth it in the long run. That's up to your board to decide. That's up to your executives to decide. Does that make sense, kind of the process you go through there? So the risk appetite is not meant to keep anybody from spending or block anybody. It's to give the parameters of what you can operate your organization in. Risk tolerance is typically a financial indicator, i.e. percent of revenue. A good benchmark is at what threshold is reporting outside the organization required. When do you get in the news? When do you have to go to the Department of Insurance with your head held down? Bond covenants, change in bond rating. A lot of publicly traded people will look at bond rating. When's my bond going to go down? We use risk-based capital. That's what we're monitored on. Or your Medicare star rating. I've seen some plans with that. That's a little bit harder to quantify because that's more quality than it is financial. So this is a diagram that Willis Re had out there, Willis Towers Watson. So we're looking at the risk assessment process now. Identify your risks. You assess, you plan, you take your risks, you mitigate, you monitor, you respond. So that's just one example. I've got a few different examples of assessment cycles here. This is my favorite because this is our model. I'm going to go through it with how Paramount does it currently. This, if you can read it online at home, because I can't even read this right now, this is actually the model that I'm proposing to the plan. So it's a little differently worded, but they have a lot more entities. And so basically each one of those entities would be a Paramount, and it would flow up to the larger based on the appetite and tolerance levels to reporting. So we start the ERM SRM process. We first send out risk surveys, and this is a repeat for a bunch of you all. We send out risk surveys to our managers and above. Somebody asked the question earlier, year one versus year two. Year one, there's not much difference in the survey. Year one, it's a lot more administrative maintenance, administrative work, because it's all open-ended questions. Give me all your risks. Ideally, you'll put in those risk categories I went over earlier, you know, your reputational, et cetera. And then you have the job of taking all those and consolidating until you get your top 15, 20, whatever your organization decides. So we do that. Year two, for those of you that it seems easier, you go ahead and include those top risks that you identified, your emerging risks, and you say, are these still risks? And then you open it up and say, what other risks that haven't been covered would you like to disclose? Would you like to talk about? And then you see if those are heavier than the other ones. So that's why year twos and forward is easier. Yep.
With your survey process, do you at all tie the risk identification process to what your strategy is as a company to kind of get people to focus on? So if this is the strategic objectives that we're trying to hit, these are the risks that would prevent us from meeting those strategies. I mean, it's somehow how we've tried to focus it, and it's worked so. So I'm just curious if that's built into your process at all.
We almost do it the opposite way. So how do these risks impact our strategic objectives? So actually, strategic objectives is one of our categories, and it's more defined than, that's the risk group or risk category. But we actually take it from the other aspect of how are these risks, once they're identified and scored, going to impact our ability to meet our strategic objectives. I think it would be really hard to do it the other way around. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll jump in on that one. That's the same way roughly that we'll do it. And I think that's that there's some value in that approach because not everybody at all levels of the company is aware of the company's strategic objectives. And sometimes you'll say something like, oh, you know, we're... You know, part of our strategic plan is to expand into Dallas, and then somebody in some department somewhere, you know, light bulb goes off and like, oh, you guys need to be aware of this specific thing, you know, that otherwise you might not have been aware of. So I think, so we do try to couch it in the same way, and we say, this is what we're trying to accomplish. Do you know of anything that could be a risk to us accomplishing that?
And I will jump in a little bit. So our CRO is also our chief operating officer. He wears two hats, right? Before we go for voting, so after the risk identification cycle is done, we vet it through the CFO and COO to see if they have any other risks that they think should be identified, as well as during the risk scoring or prioritization. We ask people that don't have knowledge or don't feel comfortable voting to abstain so they don't skew the results. And last pass before it goes to the board, after all the risk prioritization and scoring has been done, the execs, the VPs and president, look at it to make sure that, okay, does this fit the reasonable test, right? Does this make sense? do these really look like they're in the appropriate place to make sure there was no skewing. So last year we actually had one of the VPs add a risk on that wasn't evident because not a lot of people knew about it. So that kind of goes to your strategic question. Any other questions before I move on? Okay. Where was I? So survey, consolidation of survey responses. Again, that's the painful part. That's the heavy burden of consolidating all the results. Then we have our voting and ranking. So we invite directors and above for our voting session. And first year, we had it kind of wide open. Everybody was in the same room. Discussion went on forever. We ran over time. People were getting angry, yelling across the table at each other. It was a mess. So year two, and actually this past year, we decided to limit it. So you have 3 minutes to discuss the risk at hand, and then you have 30 seconds to vote. So I literally put my phone out on the table while I'm leading this discussion. As soon as 3 minutes was up, everybody shut up, pick up your pen, vote, and we moved on. And that really helped a lot. Obviously, we told them at the beginning that. Dennis.
Thank you. So you mentioned the survey and the voting. So before this, except the survey, you don't do any interview. You don't meet with the risk owners or the department directors?
No, we don't identify the risk owners until later in the process. We choose not to do it until later in the process because we don't want to do more work than we have to. So if you have 30 risks, but you're only going to report the top 15, we don't identify risk owners for all 30. We wait until we have our top 15.
When we're doing our risk survey, I can see where for our company, and I don't know if you did it for yours, so I'm curious about this, we have different risks at different times of the year or along that continuum. So a risk for the next 3 months is one risk versus a year from now or 18 months from now, it's a longer-term risk. Did you guys divide it up just to, especially year one, as we're talking about getting the discussion started, to say to folks as you're surveying them, what do you see are your biggest risks in the next 3 months, 6, 9, 12, 18? Did you do it that way, or did you consider that?
We did consider it. We limited it to that calendar year, and the reason being is because when you're voting, if it's not going to happen within the next year, your likelihood is going to be way down. That doesn't mean it's not. So we have emerging risks or a watch list. It would probably be included on those. So for instance, re-procurement of the Medicaid bid is a high one for us. It's inevitably going to happen, I think 2018 or 2019. So that's a risk that's a huge impact to us. And we keep an eye on that. That's a long-term risk, but we have mitigation strategies right now to help us with when that happens. But that's the only one that I can think of long-term that's on the list. The other one could be ACA, but that could be tomorrow, that could be never. But it's definitely something that's really important right now. But yeah, you want to keep your eye on them, and if they are a huge impact, I would suggest mitigation strategies around it. On, there's one in the back.
A real quick comment on longer term risk is what we would do is if it's something that you know, like procurement that's a few years out, but you want to keep your eye on the ball, is to kind of break it down to something that might be more applicable in the short term. So like a specific aspect of it that you could keep an eye on. So if it's Medicaid procurement, you know, you're sure you might instead phrase it in a way that says something like not upset the state, you know, make sure we get focus on satisfaction scores, make sure we get all our data submissions correct. You know, the things that you can do in the short term, and then in your write-up, you know, kind of document that this is kind of a shorter term of a longer term risk.
Yeah. So specifically, we look at prompt pay and quality measures for that
perfect.
One. Yep.
So Jonathan, is the risk identification and risk assessment process conducted in your organization by serving and the voting, it's the frequency quarterly or annually?
The risk assessment process is an annual process. So we only do that once a year to identify the risk and rank them or prioritize them. However, that doesn't mean risk can't be brought up to us. So we have a structure of top down and down up. And I'll get to that here in a little bit, but we have our board, our ERM committee, which has all of our VPs and CEO on, and then we have product level committees. So we have Medicaid, Medicare, and commercial steering committee, and then we have the departments under there. So risks that are uncovered throughout the year are usually brought up to those product level committees, mm-hmm. and each of those chairs sit on the enterprise risk management committee and is brought up through there. And if the ERMC decides that it's something that needs to be mitigated immediately, then at that time we would bring it to the board if it gets to that level.
Okay. So regarding the timing, what time during the year the process take place?
So it really depends on when your ORSA filing is due, but I'm going to say you'll want to offline with Andrea here because she created an awesome timeline for us. But we generally start, so our Form F is due June 1. Is that right? Form F, Enterprise Risk Report, is due June 1. So we try to get that out, and then we start the survey process right after that.
Typically, how long does the process take in your organization?
It's up to you how aggressive you want to be. We do the survey. We did the voting session July 13th, I believe. Our last ERM committee was August 22nd, where we went over the scoring and the prioritization, mm-hmm. identified the risk owners, and now we are working on the current and proposed strategy, the mitigation strategies, which will lead to the ORSA filing and the reporting to the board.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? So the voting session, from the voting session, you get your heat map. Again, this is just a example of what your heat map might look like. You want your heat map, your risk ideally will go down this way, right? From top right to bottom left. Again, I can't remember if I mentioned it or not, but it's really helpful year over year if you compare your heat maps. The board really likes that because they want to see those risks going down. Department of Insurance really likes that. They want to see where your risks go from year to year. After the heat map, risk owners. So we have the heat map.
Got a question for you.
Yo.
So does the standard stay the same year to year? It's like, let's say you said you've been growing substantially as a company. So is what you consider to be, you know, the cutoff for a high risk, medium risk, low risk, do you kind of scale that each year as the business scales, or is that been set year over year?
It's been the same for us year over year, but if our business drastically changed, if our revenue went way up or down, we would change the financial impact.
Yeah, because before you might have said $100 million yep. is a big deal, and maybe now you're Absolutely. So big that $100 million, you know, you've got that on you right now.
Yeah.
And it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
You know?
So. I would definitely scale it according to your current situation. So after the heat map, after the risk voting process, heat map, and then the risk owners are identified. That's done in our ERM committee. However, it's usually the VPs and the president. They're saying, nope, they're in charge of that one. They're in charge of that one. They're in charge of that one. So that's where the risk owners are identified. Then the mitigation strategies. What we do there, the risk owners identify their current and future activities to mitigate the identified tasks. They also update quarterly. So this is more towards that strategic risk management, the ongoing. ERMC, Enterprise Risk Management Committee, we meet every other month. We invite 2 to 3 risk owners to present in front of the committee each meeting. And that keeps them accountable. So if they haven't done what they said they're going to do, you better believe that our president or our VPs are going to say, why did you say you were going to do that if you're not going to do it? But they give us their updates there. But we also get quarterly, for those that haven't been invited yet or will be invited in future, quarterly updates. And so that's the spreadsheet that I went over in my roundtable where we track the progression. So that was that one over there. Then we do stress testing, identifying test scenarios for stress testing and financial performance / solvency. And then that's just consolidation. And then that kind of, then you file your ORSA. Stress testing examples. So you can't stress test, somebody asked the question earlier, you can't necessarily stress test all of your risks. So some of them are just not quantifiable. But those that you can stress test, so we, one of our scenarios is our claims go up 10%, our cap rate goes down 5%. What's that going to do to our net income? Is that a 1 year? Is that future? What's that going to do to our RBC level? So our RBC level is what really drives if we're going to need to do something. That's just one example of the stress test that we use. Any questions before I move on here?
So for stress testing, how many years do you go far? Like, you know,
we just use a 3-year forecast. So insurance is funny, right? We, especially if you're in the government products, you don't have a lot of control over the rates you set. Now the health system doesn't necessarily understand that, but even budgeting can be difficult when you don't have your rates before the budget is due. So the 3-year forecast is about as far as I'm comfortable going. We do have a 5-year forecast. I very rarely look at it. That's more, to me, just the check the box. But we use a 3-year forecast with our stress testing. Okay. Is this helpful? Uh-oh. Your outlook is not happy. So this was our risk assessment cycle. Again, that was one. This is our personal one that we use. Here's another example. This is very similar, and I'm going to breeze through this. Here's the calendar year months up here. So board of directors meetings. Here's the ERM committee meetings. Down here, identify emerging risks. That says via risk interviews in January. Business area risk prioritization workshops in February, March. Enterprise level consolidation and prioritization in April. Review risk mitigation plans January through December, year round. And then support business planning, external assessment and identification. So that's just one model. Down here it shows kind of how you can incorporate strategic plan and business plan all around the risk mitigation strategies. That's just another model that's out there. Governance structure. Retired yet? Do you need a joke now? That lighten things up? How do you tell the difference between an extroverted and an introverted actuary? Anybody? Do you know this one? An introverted looks down at his shoes. Extroverted will look at your shoes. I love you, Eric. Dad jokes. Right? Governance structure. The objective of your governance structure is to make sure that people have clear responsibilities. If they have the title or the responsibility, you need them to know it. Chief Risk Officer, responsible for risk policy, risk analytics and reporting, business unit, CROs, if your organization is that large, communication, member of the Capital Management Committee, leader of Risk Management Committee, whatever you call them, they need to be involved. Risk owners, responsibilities, risk identification, risk measurement and reporting, create the plan for risk, your mitigation strategy, propose limits, risk mitigation, implement the plan. So they're the ones held accountable for what this guy's reporting. Risk committee, review and approve the risk policy, oversee enforcement, ensure ERM objectives are met, approve ERM strategies of business units, periodic review of ERM programs, especially focusing on effectiveness of programs in changing environments, which is what we live in. And this down here just shows your internal and external audit are key associates to the ERM program. Internal audit, ongoing assurance of compliance with risk policies. External audit, they should be able to utilize some of your documentation, especially if you have a model audit rule, as well as just review your overall ERM program from time to time. Suggested best model practice. So I told you a little bit of our kind of top-down, top-up, or bottom-up approach. Board of directors, every board meeting, they should be updated. C-suite executives, several times a year. So say that's quarterly. This is every other month for us. Middle management. So this would be our board of directors. In our lingo, this would be our ERM committee meeting. This would be our product level meetings. Arrows go both ways. There's reporting both ways. Top-down risk identification. Strategic analysis drives technical analysis and quantification. Fewer, more aggregated risks. Dynamic risk perspectives include opportunities. High level of board engagement. I can tell you that if we don't report to the board every meeting, they're asking about it. And that's a great place to be. It didn't start that way. I can tell you it didn't get that way until CMS said, tell me about your risk management program, Mr. Board Chair. What? So that's very key. Culture is key. Look at that. I queued that right up. Risk culture. The norms of behavior for individuals and groups within an organization that determine the collective ability to identify and understand, openly discuss, and act on the org's current and future risks. John Bugula, so he's a pretty, I don't want to say famous, I don't know that anybody in ERM is famous, but a well-published author and consultant. So no matter which approach the ERM has taken, again, my approach may not work for your organization. This is just an example. That's why I gave multiple models, etc. No matter which approach the ERM has taken, is the organizational talent who will have to execute it. People are the strategic plan because human capital has become the fundamental advantage of competitive advantage. So we're getting ready to talk about strategic risk management. The key to strategic risk management is you can turn risk management to be a competitive advantage. Rather than reactive, be proactive. Define SRM. Strategic risk management, a business discipline that drives deliberation and action regarding uncertainties and untapped opportunities that affect an organization's strategy and strategy execution. Strategy, set of resource allocation decisions that help a firm create and sustain a competitive advantage. Charles Darwin is not the strongest of the species that survives, not the most intelligent that survives, is the one that is most adaptable to change. So let's have a story real quick. I was at a conference in January, and I was the only healthcare person there, which is always awkward. And right next to me were two Nokia executives. And I can't remember what country they're from, but they had real fun accents. And they were the only foreign people there. But when they said they were from Nokia, the presenter kind of gave him a hard time. He's like, Nokia, what's that, right? I know Nokia from, what, mid to late 90s, that cool phone that had Snake on it and you could switch out the faceplates? Come on. So they said, when they heard this quote, they said, wow, that happened to us. We weren't using our ERM to think about the things that BlackBerry and iPhone thought about, and now Android, right? They said, whoa, that sucked to be us then. Now, they survived really well. Overseas, they're still an industry leader. But in America, when was the last time you saw a Nokia phone? Right? They're out there. They're just not very popular. Huh? Sweden. Thank you. 2003. Huh? 2003. There you go. 2004 was iPhone launch. Yeah. So. Wait. No. 2007 was iPhone launch, right? Because this is iPhone X just got released yesterday or announced. No. Sorry. Anyway, so you need to be adaptable to change. We should know that better than anybody in our industry, right? The primary difference between ERM and SRM is the degree of integration with strategic planning and the focus on upside risk and opportunities versus just risk reduction. Some of the key benefits and reasons for SRM: outside forces are creating volatility and uncertainty at a faster pace. Risks are more complex and interconnected, and industry consolidation amplifies the effect. So this industry consolidation, that goes back to the, if you're not growing, you're getting bought, right? An integrated SRM program may provide a competitive advantage by identifying and realizing opportunities. SRM helps avoid the strategy execution gap. I can tell you we aren't here yet for our organization. I would like to be there. But that's really hard to think outside the box, right? You're so ingrained in your day-to-day, it's really hard to think outside the box. So, speaking of which, these are from Forbes. A survey of the 2014 Chief Strategy Office Summit showed that only 13% of 132 respondents felt they achieved 80% or more of the expected value of their strategic initiatives. So you spend all this time identifying strategic initiatives, and only 13% felt that they met 80% or higher of what they had identified. kind of hurts, but I can see that happening in my organization sometimes. 82% of Fortune 500 CEOs feel their organization did an effective job of strategic planning. They did a good job, right? However, only 14% of those indicated that their organization did an effective job of implementing the strategy. Shocking quote, or shocking statistics there. Competitive advantage. Most strategic initiatives are the logical next step in existing strategic direction, increased investment in our existing strategy in our immediate market segment. Doing the same old, just trying to grow bigger a little bit, right? Not thinking outside the box. Think of if Nokia had thought of a smartphone. They wouldn't be in the position they ended up in. And emerge from new ideas from existing management, new information about the business or marketing environment, and this is crazy, but I can see it, and take 7 months to decide what to do, additional 13 months for implementation. So that's a total of 20 months. And this is from McKinsey Global Survey. But if you think about it, how many initiatives have you tried to start or been a part of, and then something else big comes along, and that one just goes away, right? Or the industry changes. I'm not going to read all this, don't worry. So these over here are strategic plan components, okay? I'm not going to read that. Over here, as plans develop with SRM, strategic risk management, the key question to ask both their traditional downside risks and upside opportunities. So these are good for strategic planning. What are the 1 to 3 worst things that could happen? What can we do to reduce both the probability of this happening and the impact? The best, increase the probability. You want to debate the assumptions, not the forecast. Our forecasts are pretty solid, right? But you want to look at the assumptions that are going into the forecast. All assumptions should be risk-informed and linked to your strategic risk management. It allows all to speak a common language, so your board can actually talk strategy. Discuss and understand resource deployments early. Have a plan for your resources. Clearly identify priorities. Not all are equally important. There's going to be some risk that you just say, I'm going to risk that. It's not worth us investing X number of dollars into that. Continuously monitor performance, reward, and develop capabilities. I think somebody talked about that earlier, or maybe it was at the table. I don't know of any health insurance company that has rewards based on their ERM or SRM. I can tell you, in publicly traded organizations, there's a lot tied to that. What does SRM provide? You should provide to the board the info that will assist them in performing their required risk oversight responsibilities and enhance their strategic understanding of the key performance indicators driving the business to better engage executive management in strategic decision making. They need the information to give the marching orders to the executive management for day-to-day operations. Execs, deliver them the info that will assist in making strategic decisions to grow the business and evolve the business model. Leadership, you should provide them with info necessary to monitor and evaluate the performance of the ERM program. And the business unit leaders and middle management, you need to provide them the risk-informed analysis to make tactical decisions that support the day-to-day transactions that run the business. This is that top-down approach, but you have to give them the information to let them lead. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but it's in your slide. This shows how the organization strategic planning can go to implementation, business unit planning, and then your SRM connects it all. So it's just a model. You can dig through it later. Summary. You all are like, yes. Strategic planning typically makes assumptions about the business, while risk management considers the uncertainty surrounding these assumptions during implementation. But if strategists do not think carefully and comprehensively about the risks that might be encountered in their plans, risks will be missed. And it's a lot harder to deal with that after the fact than mitigating in advance. And the great philosopher Mike Tyson, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. Any questions?
Well, I was just going to add one comment around the SRM, and I really like that last slide. I think that does summarize it very well. But part of the value from a strategic planning perspective of something like SRM is it helps assign a value to a mitigating activity similar to ROI to an investment. So a lot of times if a company is looking at adopting a new project or you know, engaging with a vendor, what do they want to know? They want to know, what's the ROI? How did you calculate the ROI? And for something like this, you know, when you're trying to mitigate a risk, like say it's a, you know, $1 million risk that you think has a 50% chance of occurring, if you could take an action that reduces that 50% to 25%, yep, you've created a value. And this structure kind of provides a way for you to show, you know, sort of the real value to mitigating activities instead of just the ROI on investments.
And to piggyback on that, if you go back to that slide with the risk tolerance, risk appetite, if you reduce that amount that risk tolerance is going to have, you have more growth opportunity for the risk appetite on other risks. So if you can mitigate that down to a lower level, you can use those resources, asset allocation, towards other initiatives. Any other questions? Thank you.